Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. This is Tech Talk. It's Michael, a Tech Talk counselor. Now, I think I might be kind of flying a little bit solo today. Dave Sparky Saganaki, you know that guy? He just gets around. He's off again somewhere else now. He spends more time, I think, in Florida and parts south than he does in his new home up in Canada. And unfortunately, wherever they're ending up there in Florida, the Wi-Fi is just terrible. So he's not able to get on Skype. We can't connect to him with technology. And we just, as much as we try. And of course, I know as regular listeners, you've experienced that, that fun with us of the hiccups and all that. But even aside from that, this is going to be a lot of fun today. We're going to have a good show. The reason being is that Jay Garman is going to be on in just a little while. Now, we always have a great time with Jay Garman, but today is going to be something special. Not only is it going to be just regular Jay and giving us his Jay Garman insight, tech, all sorts of great stuff. Geek trivia is going to be on the agenda as well. But to top it all off, he is broadcasting to us live today from the Conglomeration Sci-Fi Conference. So it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to hear what's going on at Conglomeration this year, what kind of cool stuff he's expecting. There's been some great guests down there that he's had as well. So this should be a lot of fun. We'll try to give him a call in just a few minutes and bring him on and talk to him and just geek out with Jay. We should have a lot of fun. Of course, we've got our news and views and reviews. I've actually got a review today, a short one, about a couple things, and then some cool sites of the week as well. But I know if you're tuning in today, chances are, you've been hearing about and are curious about and are wondering what the big deal about Facebook phone and the Facebook home phone app and all that good stuff. Now, this had come out in the news a little while ago. There had been a lot of speculation about Facebook maybe creating their own hardware at one point. I don't know if you recall that. That was when Google was talking about taking over Motorola and all this, and then Facebook was going to do their thing as well. Now, they've chosen not to go whole hog at this point and create their own hardware. They're not doing things like creating an actual Facebook phone, but what they did come out with just a day or two ago here was the description of what Home is. Facebook Home, a home screen replacement that layers onto your Android phone or tablet, and it brings the Facebook experience to your mobile device in a way that's a little more accessible than it had been before. Now, I haven't played with it. I haven't seen it. Nobody has really. It's going to be released April 12th. That'll be the exciting day that you can actually grab it. Now, it sounds like they're doing things somewhat right with it. Like I said, it's an application. It's something that layers on top of your existing Android, as so long, of course, as you've got ice cream sandwich or jelly bean. You will not be able to use it if you're still back on gingerbread. Unfortunately, I think mine is still gingerbread, my phone, so I may not be able to use Facebook Home. Now, my wife, though, has got a Samsung Galaxy 3 that we just bought recently that has got ice cream sandwich on it. She should be able to put this on there if she wants to. My wife is kind of a big Facebook user, so she may be intrigued. She's getting mad at me, though, because I keep telling her and teaching her new things about her phone and other stuff. I've got a little story to tell you about a laptop that blew up and what we did about that too. So she says, she can't, it's not like the Alice in Wonderland and the Red Queen and being trying to believe one impossible thing every day. She can't be taught one new impossible technology every single day. And that's what I've been trying to do with her. unfortunately. So she's a little teched out. I don't think she's going to go on to the Facebook Home bandwagon. If you do try Facebook Home, I do want to hear about it, though. Definitely check us out at facebook.com/techtalkwrlr, and I know that's where you're going to want to go if you're using Facebook Home, because you got to be loving the Facebook if you're going to throw Facebook Home on your phone. Now, it's got a lot of neat stuff. It looks like, from the glances that I've had at it and the videos that I've seen of it in action, it's very visually oriented. It brings the pictures that people are posting on your stream onto that home screen in a real nice kind of slideshow sort of effect. Chat is very easy to access, as is the live stream of the news information that your friends and coworkers and whoever else you're friended with on Facebook has are going to come up right there, and you can respond and get through and into them very, very quickly and easily. Now, interestingly here, too, I think, is that HTC, like I said, now Facebook is not creating their own hardware for this, but what they have done is they've partnered with HTC and AT&T to release a phone that is going to, by default, have Home on it and will be starting and will be supposedly optimized to give users these unique experiences, like notifications for email, notifications for calendar events, and all this kind of stuff on your Facebook Home screen. So it's going to be available on April 12th, they say. You'll be able to pre-order it, though, today if you want to. Go to at.com/Facebook Home if you're excited about it. And it looks like it's pretty reasonably priced, too, as far as these things go. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this comes around. My gut feel on this, and people feel free to call me on it in 6 months if I'm completely wrong about this, my gut feel on this is it just ain't gonna have the legs. I don't see people turning their phone into a Facebook specific device. We've seen this type of thing in the past, not recently, not since the advent of some of the really major social networking venues such as Facebook and Twitter have come into play, but we've seen the chat specific phones and hardware in the past, and they just haven't really taken off. Now, the one thing that the Facebook Home app does have going for it is, of course, you've got this huge number of people that are using Facebook very consistently, that are using Facebook literally every single day, every moment that they have free time, they're pulling out their phone. In fact, they did some surveys and showed that people are actually pulling their phone out of their pocket in order to check Facebook specifically up to 100 times per day. If this saves them a couple of seconds, half a minute, every time they do that, of having to log through, get into Facebook, you know, wait for it to update. Hey, you know, that's for those individuals, this may be a real productivity saver. For the rest of us, though, I just don't see it going anywhere, honestly. And like I said, I I am prepared to be wrong about this. I am definitely a big advocate and big proponent of the concept of the bring your own device sort of environment and mobility and the workforce mobility in our personal lives. And certainly this falls into that sort of milieu of adding mobility and making mobility easier and giving us easier access to the things that are most important to us. I just don't see this as being kind of important enough to most people, to enough people, to make it be something that we'll take off with. So, you know, I guess we'll see, right? And as I said, I'm prepared to be wrong. Now, one of the things that's come up already about Facebook Home, and then once I discuss this, we'll move off to another topic. For those of you that aren't big Facebook users, the bigger concern about Facebook Home, of course, is the concern that people have with Facebook in general, which is privacy. Man, we're putting so much of our information, so much of ourselves, so much of our location and our who we are and what we are on Facebook. And here now, we're going to connect Facebook directly with the OS of our phone. That gives access to geolocation. That gives access to crazy stuff like all incoming, outgoing SMS messages, phone calls that we've made, etc. All this activity, maybe even access to non-Facebook apps. You know, these are concerns, certainly, that we could and should, by rights, have. So what's happening with that? And now Facebook has come out with, and Mark Zuckerberg has come out with a response about Facebook's security. And they got an FAQ, a frequently asked question page, that you can find out about it. I'm not as worried as a lot of people are. You know that already if you listen to the show regularly. I do like the responses that come out. I think the important things to remember are that Facebook Home is not part of the hardware. It is still an app. You can choose to disable it. You can uninstall it and delete it. You don't have to go out, and but no one's been in your arm. And even if you install it, if you choose not to have it running all the time, it's not going to be capturing anything. And also, too, if you're a big Facebook user, you're already letting it collect most of the information that it would be able to garner anyways. Location, Facebook messages, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of that stuff is already a part of your Facebook presence. And you should know, too, that by standard Facebook rules and internal regulations, they disassociate, they disaggregate that information from you after 90 days. So after 90 days, whatever information that they've got that is identifiable to you personally, that would not normally be part of your Facebook persona, whether you've launched certain apps, your SMS, all the other stuff that it may be able to capture, that stuff is disaggregated after 90 days. So I don't know if that makes you feel more or less comfortable. but there it is. And they do say very clearly that Facebook Home will not and cannot use and see your activity within any other apps that are not Facebook. So Google Maps and things like that, they're not going to do that. They're not going to use that. If you're worried about it, go take a look. But there we are with that. Let's see. Speaking, though, about privacy and security, I don't know if you've ever heard of this company. They're not extremely well known unless you are a large marketing firm. But ComScore, which is based in Illinois, they were founded, I believe, down south. But they were recently caught in a huge class action suit for collecting and selling personal info. Now, ComScore does a number of different things. Like I said, they work with large marketing companies, but what they do is they provide for people, you could download their application, install it on your computer, and it's a tracking app. I mean, they're very clear that they're tracking you on the web. They want to track all of your internet traffic. They want to see what you're buying, where you buy it, and so on. And then they're providing that information back to the companies that have paid for access to it. The idea being, of course, that they're only tracking information and activity. And again, I'm getting back to that idea of disaggregation. They're providing it to companies, but they're disaggregating it from you individually and personally. There's no way they could go back and say, oh, okay, well, on such and such a date, I see this purchase, that was by Michael Kassler from the Tech Talk Show, and here's what I know about him now. That was supposedly not being provided. However, of course, you're hearing there's a class action suit. Guess why? They did. Not only that, but they sold personal information, including social security numbers, credit card numbers, passwords, and more. Oh my gosh. I mean, this is just the worst of the worst situation you can imagine for this kind of thing. Just crazy, crazy stuff. If you have downloaded and used the tracking software, and this also allowed you access to things like surveys and whatever that would give you money back for surveys, special prizes, and all that, take a look and see. If you had downloaded it at any time from 2005 until the present, you can be part of this class action suit. And interestingly here is that each class member could be entitled up to $1,000 in statutory damages. Now, I don't know what portion of that would go to the legal teams. I don't know what portion of that would then be split up among the actual people who take part in the class action suit. But again, you know, if you've take a look and see, and if you can figure out if you've used ComScore, if you've installed the ComScore apps, then definitely find out where to be part of this, and make sure that you're taking action with it. This is just an awful thing for a company to do, is really to break your trust like that. And they were not a small company; they were quite large, been around for a while. They would seem to be a true, truly reputable firm. Anyways, that you wouldn't expect this to happen. Although there had been previous cases back in 2006, they were accused of installing their software on computers without the user's knowledge, depending on what web pages they went to. They successfully fought that out. And then also, too, they were hit up again in 2010 because they were identified as being spyware. So, you know, there's been a few recent situations where that's come up, but this is a biggie. That's scary stuff. And you just hate to hear about it. You trust a company. And of course, we're just talking right now about Facebook and letting Facebook access everything. But boy, installing a piece of software on your machine that is intended to track anything and then not expecting that to result in problems, maybe a little beyond the pale. So I say right now is probably a really good time for us to try and give our good friend Jay Garman a call and see what he's doing down there at Conglomeration. Now, as always, because he's remote a bit, we're rolling the dice here to make sure and see if he does actually pick up. If he doesn't pick up right away, we'll do a few breaks.
Hello?
Ah, good morning, Mr. Garman. You're awake and and not in a session. You're ready and willing to talk to us.
Let's say yes.
or some variation thereof. Anyways, I was telling people I was excited to bring you on because, of course, you're not sitting at your home in your home office just doing your normal daily duties. You're actually reporting live from Conglomeration today.
You are correct, sir. The Louisville's own local multimedia sci-fi and fantasy convention, of which I am, for some reason, an organizing member. That passes the sanity test. I don't know how, but it happened.
Yeah, I think for very good reason, and especially, too, with all of the stuff that you've been doing and active in down there and have done a great job of it. I mean, the lineup of guests is always great and things like that. Now, how long has it been going on at this point? Did it just start today, or has it been going on for a couple days?
It started yesterday. We do Friday through Sunday. It's usually early to mid-April. We have to bounce our date around because there's a little horse race at the first weekend in May that tends to dictate when you can get hotel rooms around here. So
yes,
we don't have a firm weekend, but it's usually, you know, after Easter and before the Kentucky Derby in April, we have this convention, and it runs for basically 54 hours, starting at noon on Friday through 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Excellent. So now they start on Friday, do they get a lot of people that actually are able to show up on Friday, or does it kind of start to really take off today and tomorrow?
Today is our big attendance day, but we actually get most people come in and bypasses on Friday. Either right when it starts or right when they get off work. So what we try to do, because we're not completed yet, is wherever the local local school system spring break is, we are the last weekend of that. So Friday is not an issue for most of our attendees because a lot of them are local and they just are already all taking off for the spring break week.
There you go. No, that is good. That's well planned out. See, this makes a lot of sense. And I've been looking through the list of stuff that you guys have going on, and it's really impressive stuff. I mean, there's an impressive list of individuals, but you've also got a lot of kind of outside of the box fun things happening as well with Not Ready for Sci-Fi Players, and you've got Kevin Ward, and I know there was one other guy who was going to be there, and I don't have it on the tip of my tongue. Who was the selected author guest of honor this year?
Ian Harrock. He's a local author, but he's actually big in game publishing. He's published for Mongoose and a few other companies, and he's actually from my writers group. It's kind of weird. His two first novels, The Rainbow Connection, about interdimensional copyright law, and Medic, about a sentient ambulance in a post-apocalyptic hellscape, he actually brought to the writers group. So, like, I got to be one of the spec readers on the work before it was published, which was kind of fun. But by day, he's actually a reviewer for PC World and a Java coder, and he just does fiction on the side. So that sort of tells you the kind of guy he is.
Wow. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Well, you know, there's a long history of successful sci-fi authors who basically did that as their high. I mean, I'm thinking of like Robert Forward as a great example, who continued to be very active in physics and doing the physics research he was doing, and a number of others who were just involved in what they were doing and did sci-fi as a sidelight, even though they were so well beloved and certainly probably could have just done that full time.
Well, you'd be surprised how little fiction pays. You really got to do it out of the love of it, because it's not, unless you're, you know, extremely high up on the power curve, it's not going to be very profitable. Mm-hmm. I mean, put it this way, the average advance for a first novel, which generally takes between 6 months and a year to produce, is $5,000. Mm-hmm. So can you live on $5,000 for 6 months of work? I can't.
I'd be fine. I don't know about the wife and kids, but...
Well, that's true. You get you a little one-room studio with an internet connection, and you and I can survive.
That's right.
Regular human beings, however, require other things.
I'd probably weigh a lot less too, So maybe there'd be some benefits to this that are hidden. Well, and of course, there's all the. And I was just reading another article about someone, ballyhooing the advent of self-publishing. And of course, you've got Guy Kawasaki now jumping on that with his ape thing and all this other business. It seems like there are new ways for fiction writers to create revenue for themselves. But nothing about anything seems easy. In the world, it really
no self publishing for long form fiction or nonfiction is very much a lot like blogging was in the early days. Meaning, there was a free for all. So the early people who got to it first got sort of famous by being first, and then the floodgates opened. And there was a whole bunch of crap, and you couldn't tell good from bad. And then the traditional publishers. Sort of figured it out, and all the columnists and the magazine authors got together, and who are the big bloggers now? You know, it's still the big names, because you basically need some form of notoriety for people to put you out of all the noise.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Self-publishing is a lot of the same issue. There was some early winners, and now we have the floodgates open, and we're starting to get into that third phase where the big names are going, you know what? I can do this without all the overhead, because I've got a name and people will speak me out.
Yep. Yep.
So that's actually been really helpful for some very established authors, including one of Conglomeration's past guests, who's actually had a stroke recently and needs all the help he can get, Peter David. He started Crazy 8 Press and started buying back all of the back catalog he had with other publishers so he could reissue it electronically, because there's a lot more people willing to pay $2 for an e-copy of an old Peter David novel that isn't Star Trek, because he obviously can't buy a licensed Star Trek work,
yeah.
And buy it directly from him, knowing he's getting the money, than they are willing to pay $7 for a reissue paperback of it.
Mm.
That really changes the game for established authors with a big back catalog.
Yeah.
Because they can go and say, all right, I've got a dedicated fan base. You want everything of mine. And... okay, I can give that to them, whereas the publisher would look at that math and go, it's not worth it for us to, for your 1,000 fans, 20% of which will buy this reissue, we're not going to sell 200 books.
Yeah.
But it's totally worth it for him to go spend a weekend reformatting the WordPress file into an ebook and put that up on his website for $2 a pop. Yeah, I'll take the $500 that makes me, no problem.
Yep. Yep, or even give give away an older catalog copy for free, with the idea that you're generating a new set of readers for yourselves for your newer works that are coming through. I kind of hope this happens, actually, is that publishers begin to evolve into more of what I would call a trusted curator sort of role, trusted curator and marketer role for authors, in that, you know, certainly not just relying on some of these back catalog, but also too looking for new authors who maybe are self-publishing, but, you know, still need to be able to be brought to the fore and made popular by this reference.
I agree. I think the people who've done that best and really on the cutting edge of this were Bain Books. The late Jim Bain started it, and they actually released, you know, first five chapters of books on like Palm Pilot files way back in the day. But they sort of curated this Bain brand of sort of optimistic, adventuresome, military-centered science fiction, or some of it fantasy. But you just sort of, sci-fi fans buy Bain Books even if they don't know the author, because there's sort of a style to the Bain imprint that Bain has curated. So it's, okay, there's going to be a certain level of quality, there's going to be a certain flavor to it. I like those things. I'll buy whatever Bain publishes.
Yep.
And that's what I think most publishers are going to have to go towards. In fact, what I expect is big houses like Random House and so on and so forth, and you've seen a little bit of this, are going to start building out smaller niche imprints by the dozen. They're going to keep making smaller and smaller niche imprints that have these identities where they can say, all right, this is what, you know, our Blinding Cyborg imprint is all about, you know, technical sci-fi fiction. It's all hard sci-fi of a certain kind, and they'll go sign a flagship author to it, and with like, if you like this guy, we're going to get more people like this.
Yep.
And so you'd be able to discover that way.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, and that's a great point. You know, the Bain line of books, and I have many, many fond recollections of going to the local bookstore, and, you know, you could literally pull those off the shelf because of the Bain imprint was very noticeable on the side of the binding, and they always had sort of a bit of a pulp look to them with the very colorful covers and things like that, that made it very recognizable that this was a certain type of book, and you knew the publisher, and like you said, you kind of knew what you were getting, even if you didn't recognize the author. I think that sort of brand recognition is going to be just so much more important now for these trusted curators, because the cover of a book is not as easy to detect. The titles, when I'm looking through and flipping through, whether it be Amazon or my, you know, OnDrive, I think it is, for my local library where I can get ebooks that way, it doesn't come up and push into your face the same way that hard copy did when you were browsing through a bookstore. And so you're reliant a lot more on those initial impressions of, who is this coming from? Why is it recommended to me? And should I, you know, should I take a chance on it?
Absolutely. And Phil Strauss, my favorite author, has made this point that the cover is the last great problem to be solved in e-publishing. Because covers were physically printed, you only had maybe two if you had some sort of like Walmart exclusive edition or something. But now, if you have a novel that fits in multiple genres, you know, if it's a sci-fi, mystery, romance, and these things exist, you could have a sci-fi cover, you could have a mystery cover, and you could have a romance cover. But all three of them are going to need to be optimized for that, you know, 300 by 250 pixel image you're going to see on Amazon.
Yep.
or similar online sites. But you can make three covers, and it will appeal to those different audiences, all of whom would enjoy the book. Whereas now, basically, they're saying, all right, which audience is most likely to buy, we'll make that cover and abandon the other two audiences.
Yep. Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, the way that things get displayed too, you know, with the separate categories and all that, certainly my local library, the way that I take books out from my, you know, the e-library rental thing, you filter it down through category, and I could see that easily you know, evolving eventually to a state where you could have three separate covers and they would pop up depending on what category you were looking at for those books. And maybe that's, and these book covers too, though, they're horrible now, especially like the type that you mentioned specifically, the sci-fi mystery romance or the horror fantasy romance. I think they're going to get to a point where they literally just have some clip art of, you know, werewolf, vampire, and then some guy with washboard abs that you can't make out his face, and then the title emblazoned on it. That seems to be about 8 out of every 10 books that I see now listed as popular.
What you see there actually is the dark side of data mining, where they found a couple of patterns that have sold books, and now they won't deviate from that. So it becomes a self-fulfilling digital prophecy. The girl looking over her shoulder with the midriff bared from the back with the tribal lower back tattoo holding a crossbow worked for, you know, Crucial Start. So every female protagonist fantasy novel is going to have that cover now.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It drives me crazy. That's why you need these curated publishers and all that. Well, we should be talking more though about conglomeration still. And I see now, I just did a quick look and I see now, actually a name I recognize, Jason Sizemore, as the publisher guest of honor, since we're talking about publishers. And he's done a tremendous number of things. I mean, he has to have, if I recognize his name. and he's only been around, I think, for like about 10 years though, right?
It's that long, yeah. He's based out of Lexington, Kentucky, about an hour from here, home of the University of Kentucky, and he actually started a physical magazine, which I don't think they print anymore. It's all electronic now, but his niche was, we need more sci-fi horror. And he sort of jumped into that when nobody else was doing it, and it's become unbelievably successful because there was really no outlet for that. Hardcore, scary science fiction of the alien variety was not something you could publish in Analog or Asimov's or Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sort of owned that territory and has been really successful in it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, I mean, this, it just is looking like a lot of fun. And of course, there's the regular stuff that you got going on with the Masquerade and the gaming. Now, did you get involved in the gaming last night?
A little bit. Played a lot of Seven Wonders, which, if you've not played, is a good, fun, family-friendly card game. So I would recommend that. I think Fantasy Flight makes it, so I would definitely commend that unto anybody, Seven Wonders, and I'm very certain there'll be some Battlestar Galactica board gaming going on tonight, because I'm going to make sure it happens.
Excellent. And I would assume some of the traditionals, you know, AD&D and Star Wars, perhaps, and some of the other stuff that's been going around for a while. Dungeon crawls.
Yeah, the hot game this year right now is the Dresden Files role-playing game. It's very popular in the game room right now. It's been out for 3 or 4 years, but it's really catching on right now. And the funny thing is, we know for a fact, because one of our past guests of honor, Sean Patrick Fannin, is writing some source books for a new Star Wars role-playing game, which is not based on the D20 gaming engine. It's not some of Dungeons & Dragons. So he can't tell us what it is. All they can tell us is that it's coming, and it's going to be coming out soon.
Huh. Interesting. No, that should be... I'm curious now. I have another quick question too. What about Settlers of Catan? Is that still like the big thing? Are people still into that? Or is that
we're having a tournament tonight? Yes.
Okay.
And the winner of the tournament gets a 15th anniversary copy of the board game.
Wow. Okay. Cool. I have to say it's one of the ones I couldn't really get into. And it may just have been I never had the right group to play with, but I just never really got into it. Another quick question too, since it's been a while since I've been involved in you know, board gaming on a more massive level. The board gaming that I've done and the D&D stuff that I've done recently has all been just kind of very personal. Are you guys, and I hope this is the case, are you still using the actual die? It hasn't gone all computerized and mobile phone business and things like that. It's actual 20-sided and 12-siders and things like that, or is everything going electronic nowadays?
No. If you try to use those electronic dice at any of our tables, you'd be laughed out of the room. Not only do we still use dice, is the most popular prizes for winning games are new sets of dice, and probably the most popular item in our dealer's room are new, like, designer sets of dice. We also had a local hacker lab here with a 3D printer, and the first question is, can I print miniatures? And the second question is, can I print dice?
Wow. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. That is so awesome. Oh, man.
The answer to the second question, by the way, is yes, you can, but you don't want to, because the extruded plastic is very light, and the dice you print will be so light that they will just roll forever. Like, they'll roll off the table because they're not heavy enough to stop.
Oh, man. Yeah, I imagine that would be an issue. I wonder if there's a way to... Well, of course, then you'd have issues with balance, though, too. I was going to say, if you could put something while it's extruding, you know, that would sit in the center of it. But yeah, that probably wouldn't work out too well. Yeah, well, that's good to hear. Now, the one thing I've migrated to, we do still use when I'm playing, we do still use... the miniatures, we've got you know, our hex paper for outdoors and regular graph for indoors, but we did migrate to using Excel spreadsheets and things for tracking character data, and that was just much, much easier than the constant you know, grease pencils or erasers and stuff on the pen and paper. Is that acceptable, or is that still also too a bit taboo?
Oh no, we all have interactive PDFs or Excel spreadsheets for the character sheets, but we print them out. Like, we do all the calculations, we make the characters, we then print them out. We use just regular pencil during the game, and then when we level up, we go back to the computer copy, update the spreadsheet, print out a fresh copy, and then move on.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right, it's good to say. This sounds like a very good balance of a tech and old school. I'm always a little bit worried when I, you know, and like I said, I haven't been involved in real legitimate, you know, big board gaming adventures like you guys are doing right here at Conglomeration for a long time. So it's nice to hear that there's a good balance. So I want to, before we move, and I'm gonna ask you about the geek trivia question of the day. I know you've only been there for a day. We'll definitely talk again when you've gotten back home. Probably not next week. I think we're off next week. The week after, I want a full recap. But if there's one thing that people should not miss at Conglomeration, whether it's something that's already happened or something that's going to happen today or tomorrow, what is it? What would you tell people? You got to go to this. This is going to be the coolest thing.
Oh, that's a tough one. But for my personal choice, at 1 o'clock today, the famous Mind Over Melon contraption from our local hacker lab is going to be here. We've actually got an alpha beta wave feedback sensor where you concentrate with the power of your mind and use a CO2 charge to explode a watermelon. So it's basically you're using a Jedi mind trip to detonate produce.
Oh, fantastic. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I want that at home.
No, you want that in your backyard. You do not want this indoors.
Oh, yes. Well, that is true. I think that would be good, you know. Like with the kids, whenever the kids are getting really angry, just tell them, you know what, strap on the melon blower and the melon blaster and get outside. Diffuse all that anger and rage. Just strap on the melon blaster and be done with it. I could spend hours with that thing.
Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to fruit salad.
Beautiful. See, that's the kind of progression I want to have in my house. cut it off right there. Oh, man. All right. Well, Jay, I'm going to let you get back into the swing of things here. But, of course, we do have some very important business to attend to. We've got our geek trivia from last year, it feels like last year, from like 2 or 3 weeks ago, questioning what was the first Google service ever that was retired. And when and maybe why did why did it happen?
Well, the first Google service to fire was also the shortest duration service from Google of all time. It was called Google X. Hmm. It came out on March 15th, 2005, and was shut down on March 16th, 2005. It was a parody of the Mac OS X dock, where if you went to the Google homepage, it had a series of icons in the Mac style above the search bar for all the other Google services like Gmail and so on and Calendar. And it lasted just a little over 24 hours. Now, I don't know if it was intended to be an April Fool's joke that was released early, or Apple saw it and threw lawyers at it, but it lasted about 24 hours, and it's never been heard from since.
Oh, man. Now, that sounds kind of cool, though. I would have liked to have seen that. Yeah, it doesn't sound like something that they would have really intended to push forward, but it was probably fun to play with for a couple of days anyways.
Well, see, I would have found it very handy just as a way to get to all my apps from the Google page. If Google was my homepage, mm-hmm. you know, I got, oh, there's Gmail and so on and so forth. That would have been handy to me. Like, I think it would have been actually useful.
Yep.
But of course, nothing good survives.
Yes. Well, don't be too quick. They do have, if you go to your Gmail page or your Google Plus page, they do have now a black bar that goes across the top that you can one click through to Calendar, your Google Drive, your YouTubes, your Google Play, and Google Plus, and all that. So they've made it a bit easier. I wish that was a little more customizable, so that you could actually pick the things that you use more frequently. But it's there. It's there. it just doesn't look and feel anything like Apple.
That's true. And I also bear in mind, I think around this time, the iGoogle homepage came out where you could do all kinds of customization. They've since retired that, too. So
yes.
I think Google's just deciding how they want to be a homepage at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or maybe just being okay with the fact that they will not be a homepage until they take over all of the mobile devices in the world.
Oh, I mean, that's the other part of it, is they got the Chrome operating system. What more do they want?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, that's about all you need. And that was a side story that I probably won't get a chance to cover here today, but they unearthed, speaking of Apple and operating systems, they unearthed the original Apple operating system from the Apple II that Wozniak and Jobs contracted with an external company to create for them because Jobs didn't trust that Wozniak could create his own operating system the way that Jobs wanted it. So, or in the speed that he needed it. Some things never change.
Because Woz was an engineer and not a designer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, there is something to be said for that. And of course, the wonderful thing too was that they wound up paying something like $13,000 for it, which is ridiculously small for a huge operating system. But not only that, but it got done. It got done, and it got done right, and it got done in 35 days. That just blew me away. they designed an entire operating system and this project and did it for $13,000 in 35 days. And then that was the OS 2, the Apple 2 operating system for quite some time.
Well, yeah, but to be fair, I mean, the Apple II didn't exactly have a lot of operating memory. It felt like you were coding, you know, megabytes and megabytes of lines, mm-hmm. you know. You can run it on a wristwatch these days.
Yes, yeah. And in fact, one of the things they had to be very careful about was that individual instruction sets, they worked very, very hard to keep them under 256 bytes, because if they extended beyond 255 bytes, that would be considered a page overflow. It would have to go to the next page, which would require an additional cycle to run that instruction, and then double the speed of operation, or the time required for the operation. So there was a lot. Most of it was, it just really had to do with input output and getting things on and off of disk drives instead of having to use the tape drives that they had been using in the past.
Yeah. It was quite the technical challenge. Not quite the Apollo guidance computer challenge, but it was a challenge.
Yeah, I was still impressed. You ask any consultant these days to give you something in 35 days or less, and chances are you're going to be disappointed. at least from my
experience. You can't get a proposal in 35 days. It's going to take that long for the RFP.
Exactly.
And you'll pay $13,000 for them to tell you how much it's going to cost you to actually do the work.
That's it's exactly it. So I thought that was pretty impressive. Well, so what? Speaking of impressive things, what should we be thinking about then for this coming? It's probably, like I said, it'll probably be 2 weeks. But what do we have some time here to think about for the next couple of weeks?
Well, I'm going to do something in honor of the late Roger Ebert, who passed away this week, arguably the greatest film critic of all time. Despite what the reputation of most film critics, not a complete sci-fi hater.
Mm-hmm.
Every year since 1967 through 2012, Roger Ebert composed a list of the best film of the year. He anointed one film the best. So in that roughly 45-year span, the question is, how many times did Roger Ebert select a science fiction film as the best film of the year?
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a great question. Yeah, no, I recall him being positive about some of the sci-fi movies that were out. He was also very vocally negative about many as well. I recall being Roper was much more positive towards the newer breed of sci-fi that was coming out at that time in the 90s. Whereas, yeah, Ebert sort of always took the negative viewpoint. I remember back far enough to have seen Siskel and Ebert on screen at the same time, but not don't recall enough about their actual their actual review style at that time. I was a bit young.
Join the club, Chief.
So well, Jay, I will let you get back. Thank you so much for telling us about Conglomeration, though. I apologize to listeners that are listening right now and saying, Mike, why the heck didn't you tell me about Conglomeration when I could have actually signed up and done something about it? I think we mentioned it once or twice early on, but we didn't really build up to it. And I'm still... I am going to come. One of these years, I will be there. We will do this live somewhere at Conglomeration, and we will just geek out and have a lot of fun and see if we can get some of the attendees and some of the guests of honor to give us a little bit of their time and have a lot of fun. Even if it's going to be a packed hour, I think we would have a lot of fun trying to squeeze that in at Conglomeration one of these years.
Absolutely. You're welcome anytime, Chief. Just let us know when the wife will let you show up.
Yeah, well, that's between work, studying for my MBA, taking care of the kids, and it's like, yeah, making that happen, all these things come together. And you have a phenomenal family, and you have a loving wife who is incredibly tolerant, as all of our wives must be, but yours in particular, incredibly tolerant and amazing, and you need to let her know this on a daily basis, so that this never changes for you.
You have no idea, Chief. She's out of town at my niece's birthday party while this is all going on. I was exempted from a family function to be here.
Oh, wow. Oh, well, your niece, you can't, come on. She, she shouldn't have scheduled her birthday for then. That's on her, I say. Nothing to do with you. Well, hey, Jay, I'm going to let you run. Thanks so much again for your time today, and we'll look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks. And have a total blast at Conglomeration so you can tell us all about it.
All right. You have a good one too, buddy.
All right. Take care. Thanks, Jay. Jay Garman, jaygarman.net. You can find out more about him there. Now, he typically does do a recap of Conglomeration immediately thereafter and all that, and has a lot of fun with that. So hopefully he'll be doing that again this year, and we'll keep up with that. I have got to get into just a couple of quick IDs and spots and all sorts of fun stuff like that. And I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to make it real quick, though, and we'll do some after the show when we come back. But when we come back from this short break, you are listening to Tech Talk on WRLR, and that means
means we're going to have some cool sights of the week and also, too, a podcast-only song of the week. So stay tuned. Do not run away. And we'll be right back at you in less than 2 minutes.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
HACP Boxing proudly presents a night of amateur Olympic-style boxing on Saturday, April 27th at the Round Lake Sports Center located at 2004 Municipal Way, Round Lake Beach. First bout starts at 6:30 p.m. There will be a live DJ, food, and exciting amateur action. Support your local HACP boxers as they compete against tough competition coming from abroad. For more information, their number is 708-228-3593.
Hi, everybody. Listen to The Myths, hosted by me, Tony Young, on Mondays from 4 to 5 in the afternoon. That's on WRLR 98.3 LPFM. Anything goes on The Myths.
All right, we are back here, and guess what we've got time for? Yes, indeed. All righty then. Let's see now what we got. So, you know, there are a lot of cool sites that we do that are just a lot of fun, that are all about, you know, consumer electronics, doing fun stuff on the web and all this. Every once in a while, though, I bring you something that's a little more educational, a little different, and is a little closer to my heart. And this is one of those. There is an individual I know whose daughter has got multiple sclerosis, and she has created a blog and website detailing not only the diagnosis but also to the challenges and struggles that she's going through. If you go to erinhulin.com, that's erinhulin.com, you'll be able to check out and see what she's doing with her condition. And she and her mother are also lobbying hard to continue getting funding for research into MS. I also have some friends who have MS as well, and I can tell you, this is a great time to have MS. If you're going to have it, there are so many advances being made, there are so many changes and things that we're learning about the body and about the impact of multiple sclerosis and where it has come from and how it can be slowed down, hopefully eventually completely stopped. But that progress is not going to continue without individuals like Aaron, who are really promoting the need for continued research. You know, I'm not going to get into a big diatribe about sequestration and the funding and where things are going for funding and the government and all that, but clearly these things don't happen without people like Aaron, who are able to get the word out and who are able to demonstrate and show what is possible today and how people are dealing with it. So Erin Hulin, shouts out erinhulin.com. That again is erinhulin.com. Go check that out and take a look if you're curious at all, or if you have friends, or even if you don't. It's really good stuff. I'm going to move on to another quick one, though. We've got time for a couple more here, which is great. So back in my usual regular everyday ones. We've got first, we talked about graph paper earlier. I'm a big fan of graph paper. I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but I use it quite a bit. And in fact, too, my sons now in math are using graph paper as well. There are a couple of pages I'm going to tell you about that allow you to create your own graph paper however you want to make them. One is called Incompetech.com, and that is fantastic. Free online graph paper, allows you to create it however you want to. Printfreegraphpaper.com is another one. I've used both of these extensively. They're great. They don't ask you to sign up for anything. They don't shove a whole bunch of ads in your face, just a couple on the sides. Really good if you need to do that. So take a look at that and check that out. And then here's another site I'm going to tell you about too. Do you ever go to a movie and you're sitting in the movie theater and the movie ends and you're like, ah, that was awesome, what a great movie, and here come the credits and you sit there and you go, oh shoot, Should I stay? Should I go? Is there going to be one of those, Avengers kind of thing at the end where they're all sitting around eating burritos or falafel? What should I do? What should I do? Now you don't have to wonder anymore. Get this app on the iOS and Android platform, anythingafter.com. Go there and take a look and check it out. And you will then never have to wonder again whether there's something going on. We're talking about old school board games. Today, I'm going to give you one last one to have fun with for the next 2 weeks. This is great. It's called Brogue. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember. Back in the day, and I mean the day, there was a little game called Rogue. And everything on the screen was text characters, because the graphics engines were non-existent, and also, too, in order to get a game this depth and complexity, it had to be very, very simple in some of its aspects. That was a cool game. I had hours and hours, days probably, literally days of man time invested into Rogue and getting down to the lower levels of the dungeon. It's a dungeon crawler game with the most simple graphics you can imagine. They've redone it. They've remade it for 2013. Go to, search for Rogue. It's you're gonna have to. It's a crazy app link and all this other stuff. I'm not even gonna attempt to try and tell you where it is. Oh, you know what? I take that back. You'll have to get the link online. Go to techtalk.wrlr.fm, or better yet, go to facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. I'll give you links to all that stuff, all the great cool sites of the week. Shouts out again to Jay Garman. What a great show today. Mainly, in fact, I would say almost pretty much entirely due to him and the cool stuff that he's doing down there at Conglomeration. I'm going to leave you now with a song by an artist called Lorda, and the song is named Royals. A lot of fun. I think you're going to enjoy it, and thanks for listening. Come on back, not next week, but in 2 weeks. But you can always, always listen to us and find us, as I said, at facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. Send me an email, techtalk@wrlr.fm, and we will talk to you later. Have a great weekend.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings in the movies, and I'm not proud of my address. In a torn up town, no postcode envy, but every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. Care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams, but everybody's like crystal Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals.
Royals.
It's a run in our blood. That kind of love's just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. My friends and I, we've cracked the code. We count our dollars on the train to the party, and everyone who knows us knows that we're fine with this. We didn't come for money, but every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. Care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams, but everybody's like crystal Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be wrong.